Hi there. My name is Michael Lawler, and this is the We Thrive podcast, where we discuss health and well-being topics through the prism of the four pillars of health: the mind, the body, the heart, and the gut, and how they can help us to live well, live happy, and live long. Well, we're on episode four today, guys, and as we've been speaking in the past couple of podcasts, we've been talking about the mind and the body, and today we're going to talk about the gut, which essentially means our food, you know, our diets, what we actually eat. Now, don't get mixed up with diet. I don't mean if you're on a particular diet. What I mean by diet is the actual food choices that you make yourself, okay? So why food? You know, why should food be an issue for us? Well, I mean, everybody knows right now that, you know, we're all aware that what we eat and drink are inextricably linked with our health. But, you know, poor diet, if you look at it, if you look at all of the statistics, poor diet is the single greatest cause of global ill health, more than smoking, more than alcohol, and more than pollution. Now, that's some statement, okay? As I said before, we are aware that, you know, eating and drinking are really, you know, are cornerstones for our health. But the question for many of us is, how do we feed ourselves and our families for health? You know, and how do we feed ourselves affordably? And how do we feed ourselves sustainably? And this, we're going to talk about this in later episodes, but it's just a good starting point for us to kick off today's discussion. I mean, the availability of good food can be a problem. I guess for myself, if I don't bring lunch to work, it can be difficult to find food that will, you know, to use the old naturopathic tenet, food that will drive the cells in your body and not just stave off hunger. It can be difficult, and it depends on what parts of, I live in the city, it depends on what parts of the city you're in. I mean, I suppose the poorest socioeconomic neighborhoods, it's a lot more difficult to get your hands on decent food that's affordable. And I suppose then in the more affluent areas, it's a lot easier to come by the food, but sometimes it can be expensive. So, you know, we have to strike some kind of a balance here as we go forward. I guess Ireland comes late to the party for a lot of things that are happening in Europe. And really, I guess if you look at Europe, it's in Germany in particular. I spent some time in Germany and France. It's very easy to be able to go out during your day if you haven't prepared meals and get good quality, nutritious food very, very close to your house, no matter where you live. But it doesn't seem to be the case back here yet. So it's taken us a while to catch on to that. But I think it's changing. You know, if the national consensus is that things will change when it comes to this. So it's just something to be mindful of, that we need to make changes. Policymakers need to make changes in those areas. And I guess, you know, people that are running restaurants and food places should consider this going forward. Now, you know, there's a lot of discussion in social media about diets. What diet is good? Is this diet good? Is that diet good? And in the clinic, I'm asked this every week. You know, I'm asked, does the Atkins diet work? Does the paleo diet work? And, you know, does the Mediterranean diet work? And I guess my answer to this is, well, you know, they all work, but they don't work for everybody. And this is where we fall down. We think that we have this idea that one diet is going to be good for vast swathes of the population, which cannot be the case, because we're all different. We're all made differently. Our bodily functions are different. Our microbiomes are different. The way our enzymes and our hormones function are different from person to person. So, you know, to say that one diet is good for all, it's a misnomer. You really can't adopt that one-size-fits-all mentality. Of course, you know, if you look at it, I mean, basically, I'm a Chinese medicine practitioner and a naturopath, and, you know, we would never give cold-type foods to people that have cold conditions. You just make the situation worse. And then, conversely, we would never give heating foods. I don't mean by temperature. I mean foods that heat the body up internally when they break down. The likes of spices, the likes of, I guess, some of the warmer food, the warmer and hotter food in energy. Like lamb is considered a very, very hot and warming food, which can be very good for cold conditions. But, you know, you've just got to be careful to strike that balance between, you know, heating and cooling foods. So, you know, that's another example of, you know, one size doesn't fit all. So, you know, so the question is, yeah, diets, you know, certain diets do work for certain people, but not for all. And then we have, you know, we've got to consider the cost of our food. I said earlier, I mean, the cost implication of health and well-being. Is this a middle-class pursuit? This is a question that's leveled at a lot of people in the health and well-being sector right now. Is it really a middle-class pursuit? Is it for people that have a lot of money and a lot of time? Well, you know, my answer to that is no, it's not. It can't be a middle-class pursuit because we all need to be nutritionally complete. We all need to drive ourselves. So I guess, as I said earlier, we are moving towards that in Ireland. We're still a bit behind the curve, but I do see a future where we have the, you know, maybe the lower socioeconomic areas doing a little better with their availability of good quality nutritious food. Also, another question I'm asking the clinic is: should I take supplements? What kind of supplements should I take? And again, this is a poison chalice because really, naturopathically, we should be taking in all of our minerals and vitamins in our food. And that's what we mean when we say whole food. We mean the whole aspect of the food. So when you isolate one particular ingredient or mineral or vitamin from a food, you take it away from its synergistic balance in that whole food. So what can happen is the body won't absorb it as readily as it would absorb it if it was actually in its whole food, because the vitamins and minerals in foods, they work synergistically with one another and with the enzymes that are in those plants, let's say. So if you isolate one or other of those and try and put it into a supplement and take it, the body won't take it on as well as whole food. So remember, if you're talking about mineral and vitamin quality in the body, you really need to take it in your whole foods. Now, I know in the modern life, it's not that easy to cover all of our mineral and vitamin requirements. So, you know, at that point, maybe it's a consideration. If you just don't have the time, maybe it's a consideration where you take good, high quality, bioavailable supplements to supplement what you can't get in your diet at any particular time. But you can't live on them. If you're stuck for time, you got to make sure that you do have access to whole food at some point during your day. It's so important. You know, there's a lot of talk about soil these days and how soil is nothing like it was decades ago. Soil degradation and the loss of the important minerals that are in the soil. And how has this happened? Well, it's happened from, I guess, farming practices have changed over the past couple of decades. We're moving more now to a quantity-based delivery of, let's say, vegetables than in the past where it was more quantity. Now, I know there are smaller farms out there that are working on the quantity aspect, but for the most part, a lot of the foods that you'll see in the supermarkets these days are coming from those big agricultural companies that are, you know, where rapid farming, where everything is, I guess, it's, you know, it's sped up in order to produce a better yield. And I guess there's a lot of pesticides, there's a lot of additions put into the soil that are actually weakening it and depleting it of the important minerals like selenium, let's say. I mean, selenium is really degrading in our soil right now. And selenium is so important for our health. I mean, you know, if you have low levels of selenium in the body, you're prone to getting hypothyroidism, which is an epidemic all of its own. And then we have magnesium. Magnesium is so important in our diets, but we don't get it in. And also, because of the way the soil is at the minute, magnesium is not in the soil, or it's in the soil at such low levels that it's of no use to us. Magnesium calms the nervous system. Magnesium relaxes the muscle, and the heart is a muscle. So magnesium is so important to the proper functioning of the heartbeat, essentially. So we're on the back foot here. with the modern farming practices. And I guess, you know, the question comes up now, should we be eating organically? I mean, the argument against organic and genetically modified vegetables, people ask me, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is it's in the mineral levels. Okay, because organic farms obviously are going to look after the soil. They're not going to have that fast turnover. They're smaller little family organizations or whatever, and they will pay way more attention to protecting the soil, to nurturing the soil, and, you know, only farming what they need, and knowing that there's a point where they can't go any further to take more out of the soil, or they're going to lose that quality. So it would always be organic versus genetically modified. I mean, that's a basic. So organic food has all of those minerals that you need. I mean, obviously, it's not as they're not as strong as they were decades ago, but they're still there. So always shop organically if you can. And I know sometimes it's a little more economic. It's more expensive to shop for organic foods, but we can do it. There are ways. I mean, some of the big chain supermarkets now have decent organic variety vegetables at good prices. So, okay, so moving on. So, you know, what we eat is important for sure. I mean, what foods are we eating? And we will cover this topic in depth over the next couple of episodes. But what's really important too is how we eat. And there's not a whole lot of discussion on how we eat right now in the media and on social media. And what do I mean by how do we eat? Well, you know, if you think about it, there's an old proverb that says you should eat your breakfast alone, you should share your lunch with your friend, and you should give your dinner to your enemy. Now, what do we mean by this? Well, it's the way the body is set up. I mean, the body works on a biological clock. It's gotten press recently, but it's called the circadian rhythm. So the body functions. So the energy in the body is goes to certain organ systems at different times during the day. So your digestive system has a lot of energy in it between 7 and 9 o'clock in the morning. So this is the time we should be eating breakfast. And then also in the evening, it has a lot of energy there at, you know, earlier in the evening. I guess between 5 and 7 or 5 and 8. So these are the times that we need to be eating. Now, it doesn't have the same amount of energy in the evening as it does in the morning. So that's where this proverb comes in. They're saying that what we should be doing is we should be eating, the biggest meal of the day should be consumed in the morning. At lunchtime, we should have a meal that's not as large as what we had at breakfast, but substantial enough. And then in the evening, it's supposed to be the smallest meal. But of course, in the West, it's the opposite. We start off with a small breakfast. We start off with a bigger lunch. And then by the time dinner comes around, we have this huge plate of dinner that we put into our systems. Now, this causes problems because, as discussed earlier, this biological clock doesn't give the energy to your digestive system at nighttime like it does in the morning. And particularly if you go over 8 o'clock and eat at 9 o'clock, the body, you've essentially thrown in a pie into a cold oven. It just can't cook it. And then we get problems coming down from that, like insomnia and everything else. You can't sleep. But we really put ourselves under pressure by not eating a breakfast. A lot of people that can't lose weight actually skip breakfast. And this is a misnomer, because if you think about it, you've just starved your body for, you know, let's say you finished eating at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and then you wake up in the morning at 8, and you don't actually eat till, you know, maybe 10 or 11 o'clock. You've gone over 12 hours there where you haven't eaten anything. So what happens is the body sees this and it goes into preservation mode. It says, well, this might happen again. So I'm going to hang on to the fat tissue I have here. So it's very, very difficult for people that are trying to lose weight if they don't eat a breakfast. And this is the basic. So that's one basic idea for how we eat. Also, if you think about the way we eat, okay, so you take a look at any restaurant these days and you'll see individuals in having their food and they're on their phones, they're on smartphones, or they're on their laptop, they're working. And even at home, you know, there's laptops, there's phones, and we're watching them as we eat, or we're watching TV when we eat. And the problem with this is, this is a lack of mindful eating. We need to be mindful when we eat because, you know, when you look at food, automatically in your body, enzymes start to trigger to get ready for you to put that food in your mouth. So just before you've eaten anything, by merely looking at food, you start this whole process of digestion where those enzymes begin to fire in the mouth, getting ready for the food. But if you're, I guess if your attention is elsewhere, if your attention is on Facebook or if you're watching the news on TV, this doesn't happen like it should. So the enzymes aren't getting produced and secreted as they should be because you're not mindful, okay? Because your mind is somewhere else. So what happens is we got food coming into the system and it's not getting broken down. So we put an extra burden onto the actual digestive system that shouldn't be there. And also, you know, when our focus is elsewhere, we're probably not chewing properly. We're supposed, in Ayurvedic medicine, they say we must chew 32 times for meat. And if you're on your phone, you're not going to chew 32 times for meat because it goes down and it goes down into the system. You're not being mindful of what you're eating and everything happens too fast. Okay, so we need to address our behavior, I guess, around how we eat, okay? More than, it's equally important as what we eat. So moving on from that then, we can talk about the microbiome. You know, as I said earlier, everyone's microbiome is different from the next. And some might be thinking, what is a microbiome? Well, essentially, it's the buildup of the bacteria in your gut, and you get it from when you're born. So your whole microbiome is established at birth when you pass through the birth canal. You pick up the bacteria passing through the birth canal, and that establishes essentially your immune system for your entire life. Now you can add to it, I guess, as you get older, and if your practices with food are good, but really you're set. That's the time that it's set. I mean, and it's a very finite realm that we have in our gut. We move with that through our lives, and then we affect it by, I guess, overuse of antibiotics. We affect it by, clinical living where we sterilize everything to the nth degree, and we're not in contact with microbes anymore. So what's happening is our guts are suffering from a dysbiosis, which means there's a bad level of balance between the good and the bad bacteria in our guts. And then the foods that we eat have a huge impact on that. You know, we can have, you know, if we're good and we're having a lot of probiotic and prebiotic foods, well, then we have the possibility that we'll have a good and fully functioning microbiome system. But if we don't have fermented foods in our diet, we can suffer greatly from that. And, you know, if you think about it, the analogy I like to use for probiotics and prebiotics is that the probiotics are the plant and the prebiotics are the actual fertilizer that feeds the plant. So the prebiotics are the food for your probiotics. So, I mean, as I said before, probiotics, if you prescribe a probiotic to somebody, yeah, it's got a difficult time. It has to get through the digestive system all the way down. It's got to get past the stomach acid. It's got to get past the secretions in the small intestine. And then it's got to make its way all the way down to the large intestine, where it's a very busy environment down there. And there's a lot of bacteria fighting for space. So it's difficult to kind of get a little seat for itself, these probiotics that we might take in. And, you know, and this is the problem with probiotics. But, you know, we need to be focusing on those, obviously, but we need to be focusing more so on those fermented foods, which are the food for the probiotics. And these have a much easier transit through the digestive system. They get down there fairly easily. And then the minute they hit the large intestine, I think I saw a study where within an hour, there's a population of 10 million of an increase in bacteria in the gut from merely taking a prebiotic food. So that's another focus, is prebiotics and probiotics going forward. Now also, those diets that I spoke about earlier on, the paleo diet and the Atkins diet and all of those kind of things, a lot of people are using them for weight loss. Okay, and some of those more extreme diets, like I think there was this Lipotrim diet from years ago where it was essentially you were eating no food. So your body was going into ketosis and people were losing all kinds of weight. And, you know, cut to 6 months later and suddenly these people have put all that that weight back on. What they were actually losing was water. And the body went into starvation mode and they lost water. And the second they went off that diet, the weight started to build up gradually. And I guess the conventional wisdom out there in studies is that diets like that for weight loss, they never work. They never work. The only diet that will work for you for weight loss is when you take a root and branch reform of everything that we're going to be speaking about in the future. And what I've talked about today of, you know, of how you eat and what you eat. Okay. And it's not just a discussion on calories in and calories out. Yeah, that is important. It's more to do with your micronutrients, not your macronutrients. So your mineral and your vitamins. So like we said earlier, you know, your minerals and your vitamins coming from your organic food versus your genetically modified food and the like. So I guess, I mean, you know, we are going to discuss this in detail over the coming months with different experts and nutritionists in the field. So for right now, I'm going to sign off. This was episode 4. Like I say, it's just a general idea of how food and the gut, as we call it, can have an impact on our health and well-being. So please join us for next week's episode. It was great to have you today, and we'll chat to you next week. This is Michael Lawler from the We Thrive podcast, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.